Now, in one of my old churches, we were driving off to the forest. We were going to have a nice event out in the forest. We were going to have a fire, and we were going to eat some food and chat and hang out together. But obviously, trying to get to the forest, you can't just type it into Google Maps. So thankfully, some of the other leaders knew where they were going. So they said, just make sure you follow me, and you'll get there absolutely fine. So loaded the car up with young people, got in the car, and started following after this car. And we were following it along up to a roundabout, followed along. I started to get a little bit confused because all the other cars in our church turned off to the right. But I was confident in the person I was following, so I turned off to the left with him. And we kept going, we kept coming, going, and then we came to a dual carriageway. And eventually, this car who we'd been following slowed down and passed us on the inside lane. And as I looked to the left to wave at him, I realized that we'd been following the wrong car for multiple miles. We were miles away from where we were meant to be. Now, of course, that made one day a little bit difficult. We had to get on the phone and try to get directions via the phone. But it didn't make a huge difference to my life. However, sometimes we can choose people that we're going to follow for every day of our life, whose advice we're going to respect, that we're going to listen to, who we're going to follow. And if we go in the wrong direction, following the wrong leader then the effects can be catastrophic. I wonder if there are any leaders you follow who are taking you in the wrong direction. Perhaps it's the best friend whose advice runs against what the Bible would say. Perhaps it's some online teacher who advice you follow, but who often doesn't give what's best. Maybe it's just the general opinion of society, what seems to be preached from our television sets every day. It's often easier to let somebody else make the hard decisions in our life rather than make them ourselves. But what if, like me, you are following a car that's heading in the wrong direction? That's the issue as we come to Samuel this morning. The people of Israel need to find a new leader. And they make some very wrong assumptions about the kind of man they should follow. Looking at their mistakes, I hope we'll begin to see the kind of people we shouldn't be following and the one leader that is worthy of us following. So let's begin by looking at the problem with leaders. And we see that in verses 1 to 3. And really there are two problems that we see in this passage. The good leaders age and the bad ones perverts. The first problem is that good leaders age. And we see that right at the start of this passage, when Samuel grew old. That presents a huge problem for Israel. Samuel had been exactly the kind of leader that Israel had needed. Last week we saw that as the Philistines swarmed round to attack, Samuel wasn't distracted. He said, no, we need to pray. We need to get on our face. We need to come before the Lord. His leadership, and we read in the latter part of chapter 7, brought peace, brought justice. He was the right thing for Israel. But nothing lasts forever. After many years of faithful service, Samuel grew too old for his duty. And of course, this had happened many times before. There'd been Moses who'd grown too old. There'd been Joshua who'd grown too old. There'd been Samson and Jephthah and Deborah and Gideon, all the judges and leaders of Israel, each one with their many faults, had brought some level of stability. But one died after the other, leaving Israel without someone to guide them. And that can be a problem for us too. Not every leader is bad, but every leader does have an end point. And that can lead to a crisis. Where are we going to turn to next? That doesn't just happen in church life, it can happen outside as well. Perhaps you trust a friend in your life, but they start to drift apart from you. And you've got no one's guidance to fall back on. Maybe there's a particular preacher you look up to, but then they retire and go into the background. Maybe you lean upon a husband or wife to guide you, to support you, but death separates you. That's the first problem with leaders. Good leaders age. But even worse is what happens with the bad ones, because bad leaders pervert. Now, to pervert something is to take something that's good and bend it to wicked ends. Leadership provides power, and that power can be used for good, but it can also very easily be used for evil. And that's what we see happening here. So, verse 1 again, when Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders. The name of his firstborn son was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. Samuel had been very faithful throughout his ministry. Actually, if you remember, right at the very beginning, he was given a great big test, wasn't he? The first message God gave Samuel was a message against his adopted father. The temptation would have been great for Samuel to have twisted that message, to have kept it hidden. But he did the right thing. He told him the truth. The sons aren't like that. They don't see themselves as God's servants. They see themselves as leaders who deserve everything they can get hold of. So they accepted bribes. They pervert justice. And that can happen with leaders today as well. People that you trust will often pervert their role. Maybe it's a politician who's only in it for their own good, not for the good of society. Maybe it's a friend who you think is out to help you, but actually is only looking to their own selfish ends. Maybe it's a parent who, rather than protecting their children, leading them in the way of godliness, just takes advantage to their own end. And of course, the church is not immune to this. There's been scandal after scandal that has shown how leaders in church context have used their position for perverted goals, for money, sex, or power. If Israel wasn't safe from bad leaders, then we shouldn't be surprised that the church isn't either. So those are the problems with leaders. The good ones age, and the bad ones pervert. It's no different in our age than it was in Israel. So what's the solution? Well, before we get to the right solution, we begin with a wrong solution. Look at verses 4 to 5. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, "You are old." Tip, if somebody's getting old, that's not the best way to start the conversation, but never mind. They said to him, "You are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." Now on the surface, there seems to be quite a lot of wisdom there, doesn't there? Samuel's sons clearly aren't up to the task. They're not godly men. There needs to be a replacement for Samuel found, and this is becoming a problem generation after generation. They're not finding a consistent leadership pattern. So why not get a king? Why not have a dynasty where a father to son to son to son passes on the crown? And so there can be a stable leadership in Israel. It sounds so good. But there's some significant problems with that plan. First of all, we've already seen, and we're only in chapter 8 of Samuel, we've already seen twice that father-son dynasties don't really work. So if you remember, Eli wasn't a king, but he was a priest. And he had his sons take over from him, and they perverted God's law. They used the sacrifices for their own end. Samuel wasn't a king either, but he was a judge. He was a leader in Israel. And as we've just seen, his sons failed to live up to his standards. So even if the first king's good, what is there to suggest that the next king and the king after that is going to be good as well? And of course, if you look through Israel's history, if you look at the book of Kings, you'll find a lot more descriptions of a king being bad rather than a king being good. But another problem is the motivation. They tell Samuel to appoint a king to leaders such as all the other nations have. They want to be like everyone else. They want to be like all the other nations. It's a bit like the teenager who moans about going to church on a Sunday morning and says, "Why can't we just be like everyone else and have Sunday off?" They just want to fit in. They just want to be like the world around them. That's expanded a bit in verse 20 to skip forward. It says, "Then we shall be like all the other nations with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." Just want to be like everyone else. God has set them apart as a special nation, not with a human king, but with God himself as king. They're holy. They're special. But they want to be like everyone else. They want a king. They want to fight battles. That's what nations did at this point in time. They failed to recognize that being like the world is the worst thing for them. Thirdly, there's one big gap in their logic in that verse. Israel's God's nation. Yet there's no mention of God at all. Do you remember when they marched the Ark of the Covenant out like a lucky charm to battle? And they didn't ask God what it was that he wanted them to do. Well, yet again, they are making a massive decision about the future of Israel. And they haven't consulted God and his revelation to see what they should do. God makes that clear in verse 7. He says, it is not you they have rejected, he's speaking to Samuel, it's not you that they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. This isn't a power struggle between Samuel and the elders of the people. This is a power struggle between simple people and God. It's exactly the same thing as we saw in the children's talk. People are assuming that they know better than God how to live their lives. Up to this point in Israel's history, all of the leaders of Israel have been appointed directly by God. Moses, Aaron, Joshua, the judges, Samuel himself. God had been the king of his people, and all the leaders were kind of sub-regents under him. Now the people wanted to take God out of the picture, and they wanted to be like everyone else. Now, I don't think there's many Christians that are promoting the idea of passing leadership on from father to son. Sometimes that happens. It can be a bit awkward in church life. But when churches make bad decisions, ultimately they have the same logic that the people of Israel have. We want to be just like the rest of the nations. We want to be like everyone else. Sometimes if you look at job adverts for pastors for churches, they can have qualifications that are a little different from a CEO at a big firm. They're asked to bring charisma, to be good public speakers, to be good leaders, all things that could very easily be true without the biblical qualifications. When God lists what he wants in a leader, so often more looking at the heart rather than the skill set. Is it a surprise that many churches have failed when they've been looking for what the world looks for? God starts to disappear from the picture as we start to look at the kind of leader that has success in the world and assume that will work in the church as well. But at a deeper level than just who leads a church, each of us should be asking, who am I letting lead me? Too often we go from one bad leader to another. We take wisdom from one person, and when that doesn't work because it's ungodly wisdom, we swing to the other side and we go to someone else who's giving us different ungodly wisdom, but ungodly wisdom nonetheless. And we bounce from leader to leader to leader, letting them make decisions about our lives that are ruining them. And we fail to realize that it should be God taking the reins. Think to yourself, apart from myself, who in my life has the most influence over me? Is that person doing what God wants? Or are they just like all the nations? Are they just in it for themselves? So that's the problem. But someone might turn around and say, well, what happens when I reject God as leader? Maybe we all believe, a bit like Eve, that if God isn't on the throne and I'm making the decisions, it's going to be better. Why is it so bad? Well, we see in verses 6 to 22, the resulting judgment. And God gives one of his most severe judgments in verses 6 to 22. What do you think the most severe judgment would be? Fire coming down from heaven. No, he doesn't give that. An army sweeping through and killing. Doesn't give that. And here's the severe judgment God gives. He lets the people of Israel get what they want. He lets the people of Israel get what they want. That is the worst thing he could allow to happen. And yet it's what happened. Verse 6. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord. Look at what a good leader does, by the way. He goes to the Lord when he's displeased. Verse 7. And the Lord told him, Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. As they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now, listen to them, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights. Listen to them. Why should Samuel listen to them? Why should he obey the demands of these people if they're against God's will? Why is God letting that happen? It's a judgment. God is letting them get exactly what they want. It's like a parent who's taking their child to school and the child starts to have a bit of a strop and say, I don't want to wear a coat today. And a parent sort of says, well, look at the rain clouds, it's going to rain. They say, I don't want to wear a coat. Fine, the parent might say. You don't want to wear a coat, you don't have to wear a coat. That's a punishment in a way, isn't it? Because they're going to have to face the consequences of that decision. And that's what God is doing here. He's saying to Samuel, tell the people, if you want a king, you'll get a king. But just like a good parent won't let their child leave the coat at home without explaining to them, they'll say, look, it's going to rain, you're going to get cold, you're going to get wet, you might get ill. So God warns his people through Samuel what the consequences of this decision will be. Have a look at verse 10 to 18. Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, this is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses. And they will run in front of his chariots, i.e. the most dangerous place on the battlefield. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands, or commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest. And still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks and you yourselves will become his slaves. When the day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen. But the Lord will not answer you in that day. Good thing we didn't use that as our motto text for Jubilee weekend, isn't it? Not a very positive picture of the monarchy. He says to Israel, your sons are going to die in battle or serve him as farmers. Your daughters will make his perfume or cook for him. All your best fields will be taken. You'll be taxed. There will come a time when you will want anything else but to have a king. God's saying, face up to it. This is the consequences. I am telling you what's going to happen. Of course, the people think they know best. But the people refuse to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we should be like all the other nations with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles. And Samuel heard all that the people said. He repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, listen to them and give them a king. And Samuel said to the Israelites, everyone go back to your own town. They get this solemn warning, but they don't listen. And so they get what they asked for. God's great judgment upon them is to let them get what they wanted. We often think the worst thing God would do to us would be to send a disaster, but that's not the case. Disasters often wake people up to their spiritual need. We saw that last time, didn't we? When those people died for looking into the Ark of the Covenant, it caused the people to turn back to God. It's much worse for God to just leave us be, go our own way. In Romans chapter 1, Paul talks of the Roman people turning from the true God to false gods. And he says, the repeated judgment over and over, God gave them over. So Romans 1:21, God gave them over. And the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity, the degrading of their bodies with one another. God gave them over to sinful lusts. God gave them over to a depraved mind so that they do what ought not to be done. He's saying what God did to judge the Romans, who I'm preaching to at this point, is he let them carry on in their sinful way. This is the ultimate judgment for sin. When God gives us warnings from Scripture, that's his love. like a good parent, he's calling us out of the evil that happens to us. God is telling us, no, don't go that way. It's going to cause you harm. We don't listen. We assume we know better than God. But a life without God is not the life of joy that Satan paints the picture of like he did to Eve. It always brings greater suffering. This is the mistake of the Israelites. They choose leaders like the nations, and God lets them have leaders like the nations. And so too with us. If we reject God's guiding hands on our lives, and we choose to follow the guidance of the world around us, well, we'll face the consequences of that. Now, at this point, our passage is over. It's not a very happy ending, is it? For those of you who are new to reading the Bible, this is often the way it is with the Old Testament, the part of the Bible written before Jesus. It often raises up problems, but it doesn't give the solution. It's a bit like watching a TV series. In episode one, you're completely confused of what's going on. Episode two, you maybe got a bit more of an idea, but up until episode four, there's still a lot of unanswered questions until finally you get the season finale in episode five. And you could actually go back to the start, watch all those episodes again, and you'd see all the ways that they were building up to that finish, how it all made sense. Well, that's the way it is with the Bible. The Old Testament sets up a lot of the problems, and they get answered in Jesus. Since we know the answer, it makes sense for us to go back to the Old Testament and see, well, how does Jesus solve the problems that were raised in this passage? So our big question in this passage is, where are good leaders going to come from? They can't just stick with Samuel. He's going to die soon, sad as it is. They can't stick with Samuel's sons. They're terrible. They can't appoint a king because the king will rule over them and be a terrible ruler of them. So what's the solution? We saw that the problem with leaders is that the good ones age and the bad ones pervert. So we need a good leader who won't pervert God's law. We also need one who can last forever. We need one who doesn't rival God, but who is at the very least appointed by God, if not God himself. We need a king who doesn't take for his own benefit and gain, but a king who serves. And that king is Jesus. He's the fulfillment of everything that the Jews were looking for in their king. He was a king, he was a ruler, but a king who was nothing like the one described in verses 10 to 18. Was he a good king? Oh, yes. So much better than Samuel ever was. Samuel no doubt made his mistakes. He wasn't perfect. Jesus never sinned. His judgment was always right. He's a good king. But is he just going to grow old and die like all the other good leaders that have gone before? Well, no. He died and he rose from the dead. And that shows that he's going to be the king for all eternity. Nothing can stop him. Unlike Samuel, he'll never age himself out of the job. He'll never have to hand it over to some inferior line of sons. From everlasting to everlasting, he is king. Would he rival God as king? Well, no, he is God. If Jesus is king, then God is king. It's the perfect solution. Is he going to be like Samuel describes in verses 10 to 18? Take. Not at all. If you've been here on the evening service, we've been learning about how God is self-sufficient. He is independent. He doesn't need anything. Jesus has never truly needed anything. He's got everything he could ever want for. So the only thing he could do towards other beings is not to take from them, but to give to them. Puts it like this when he was on earth. The Son of Man, that's his word for himself, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus isn't the king who sits in his chariot with 10,000 other men in front of him to die before the battle gets to him. Jesus is the one leading the line. He's the one who takes the punishment, who takes the death, so that the people can be saved. Jesus is the true solution. This passage. He's the king we really and truly need. No other leader like him exists. Every other king will fail on one of those. Maybe they'll take rather than give. Maybe they'll rival God rather than promote him. Maybe they'll bring injustice rather than justice. Even if you get that one in a million chance where there's a leader who, like Samuel, is half decent, they're only going to age and you'll be right back to where you started. We all follow someone. We're all listening to someone's advice. But the only person that we can truly trust in every single thing they say is the Lord Jesus. Now, perhaps some of you are deciding at this point in time whether to follow the Lord Jesus, and you know it's going to bring some big changes. For Jesus to rule means you'll have to make some very difficult decisions. Your life will be changed forever. But let me assure you that there's no one better you could follow. There's no one who cares for you like Jesus does. There's no one who knows you're good like Jesus does. So if you haven't followed him yet, make today the day that you say, Jesus, you are my king. I'll follow you unlike anyone else. And Christians, we may have decided at one point in our life, I'm going to follow Jesus. Point we become Christians. But there often come points along the journey where we're tempted to go back to relying on ourselves. Maybe Jesus was wrong on just this one thing. Maybe he doesn't have what's best for me in mind. No, here is the one who gave his life for you. You can trust every single one of his commands to be for your good. Finally, Christians, this is to make an impact on the way that we run our churches. Jesus is to be the head of our church, not just in a formal way that we say it and we put it on a piece of paper. He's really to be the head. It's not to be like it is with the Queen, where the Queen is officially the head of our state, but she doesn't really do a whole lot, no offense, Mrs. Windsor, or however we should say things. Jesus is to be the true king of his church. Nat and I went on holiday before we had kids to Rome once, and we went into St. Peter's, the big church where the Pope lives. And when you go into St. Peter's, the thing that strikes you is the massive statues of the popes all around the room, the popes who were meant to be the leaders of the church. Now, can you imagine if you walked into our church and there was a giant statue of me, Simon, and Peter around the edges of the room? What would you be thinking? But that's the way it is. The only time I saw Jesus in that main room, he was handing the keys over to a pope. And if you know what the symbolism is, the keys represent the authority in the church. So basically, Jesus is just saying to the popes, you're in charge now, I'll leave it to you. Now, I guess most of us as Protestants would sort of say, well, that's terrible, that's horrendous. But there can be a Protestant version of that, can't there? There can be a church leader, or even a church member who says, my way is best. Everything must be done the way I want it to be. Where there's no real consideration of what Jesus thinks is best for his church. We need to think carefully about what it means for Jesus to be the head of the church. Not just in a nominal sense, but really and truly. Now, of course, Jesus is not walking amongst us. But perhaps think about it like this. In the good old days of before there was any technology, you didn't get to hear the Queen or the Prime Minister announcing on TV what the rules were. No, the King or the Queen would write a rule and they'd send it out to their lords across the country, who would then pass that on to the more local leadership and pass it on to the people. And that's similar to the way God functions today. He gives us his words. And that is disseminated to the leaders of the church who are to say what the word says. And then the church has the responsibility to look at that word and say, is that really what God is saying? Now, on Tuesday, we're having our church members meeting. And we need to make sure that we understand how we make decisions on those kind of occasions. It's not the leaders bossing around the congregation so that they can get whatever they think's best. Nor is it for the loudest voice in the room to kind of bully everyone into their point of view. Nor is it for us to vote and figure out what the most popular thing is. As we meet together, we're trying seriously to figure out what King Jesus would want us to do. So the leaders we choose in our churches should be those who are servant-hearted, who are not building their own egos and kingdoms, looking to do what God would want to do. Sure, we fail often, but that's the idea. And when we're trying to figure out decisions, we're not just asking what would be popular. We're not just asking who's the loudest and most aggressive voice in the room. We're asking, what would Jesus want us to do? The only leader that we should give 100% allegiance to is Jesus. In the church beneath that, we're to pray for leaders who see themselves as under-shepherds, like Samuel, using leadership for the church's good and not for their own. So, who's the leader that we need? Well, it's no human being here on earth. It's only the Lord Jesus Christ. If you've not trusted him as your leader today, I urge you to bow the knee. He will never let you down. Your friend may have let you down. Your husband or wife may have let you down. That person whose advice you always listen to may have let you down. That leader, that teacher, that preacher, that pastor. All those people may have let you down. Jesus never will. If you give yourself wholeheartedly to him, you'll never regret it. But you'll see that it was the greatest decision you made every day of your life.